Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
Privilege, Mr. Chairman? Personal privilege? Okay, for our audience, this is the first time that Senator Bradford got to chair a committee as vice chair. Not often do you get to chair a committee, but it's a great honor for us to witness this historic occasion at this point in our state's history, and I commend the senator for that.
Thank you, Senator. I'll call this local government committee to order. And first point of business, we'll have a roll call.
Senator Gillespie?
Here.
Klocek?
Here.
Miles? Schmidt?
Here.
Teason?
Here.
Bradford?
Here.
Gant?
We have a quorum. So the first thing I'd like to do is introduce our pages. Ryan Peterson from Hitchcock. Thank you, Ryan. And Lori Albers from New Underwood. Thank you very much. Let's see. We need an approval of the minutes.
Second.
Oh, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. I got a little coach in here. So, okay, here's our. Okay, if we're ready with Senate Bill 113, we'll take that first.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Local Government Committee. My name is Frank Klocek, District 19 Senator from Scotland. I come before you with a bill that's meant to clarify a few things in our state statute in reference to national law and state law. And you have before you a article by the Yankton Press and Dakotan talking about the recent trial that's happened with BY Water and Yankton City versus BY Water on a boundary issue. And as long as I've been in here in the legislature, it seems like there's always these boundary issues come up, whether it be in water, electricity, sewer. All these things seem to come to the forefront. And what this bill simply does is to clarify what's already in federal statute now and what the lawsuit was based on, and to prevent future lawsuits or possibilities of going down that path, so that any lawyer at any place at any time can see clearly that the city versus the rural water system jurisdictional issues are clear in our statute. And it simply adds on 6, 7, and 8 new language stating that a nonprofit corporation that is organized under the water district under these chapters, 46A18, or is a nonprofit corporation. And then on line 9, it adds the word who resides outside the territorial boundaries of the rural water system. And then we have new language on 13, 14, and 15 as well, and that refers to the federal law that is now in effect, and it just references that so that they can be clear that we cannot go in violation of our federal laws. And if you look through that handout by the Press and Dakotan, it talks about what has happened and what the judge ruled. And we need to start getting legislators more heavily involved in the process of looking at the existing laws, Winandy said. And Winandy's from the city of Yankton. Another important element of the settlement is that Yankton recognizes BY has the right to serve the proposed Majestic Heights housing development, and it's a 40-acre property referred to as a Biller property just west of the city limits. And again, the bottom line is if Yankton doesn't grow, BY doesn't grow. If BY doesn't grow, Yankton doesn't grow, and that's what the mayor spec had said. Yankton in the lawsuit has to pay $100,000 to BY for its attorney fees, and the law firm that represented that BY client is in the audience today. Part of the settlement was approved 8-0 by the commission. The mayor did abstain because his real estate company is working on this Biller's property. Speck said it's in our best interest to work with BY Water when and wherever we can. I believe it's in their best interest to work with the city of Yankton when and wherever they can. And that's all this is about, ladies and gentlemen, or of the committee, is try to put some finality to this thing so that these lawsuits don't happen in the future. Nobody really wins when we have to go to court on issues like this, and this is simply a clarification of that. I would be glad to answer any questions and look forward to your support of Senate Bill 113.
Thank you, Senator Kocher. Are there any other proponents? Yes.
Can I ask a question of the chair?
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Kocher. I'm not familiar with, and I haven't had a chance to, I'm not a speed reader. Can you give me a two-minute overview of what the court case was and resulted in this settlement? Are we going to hear more about that at some point?
I guess I was hoping that the law firm of Duncan & Duncan could answer those questions, but I will try to, and then I'm sure if you want to, you could refer to them to answer those questions. But what this did, the city sued BY Water because they wanted the jurisdiction down by the lake area, and it was not annexed into the city, but it was within that three-mile limit. And the three-mile limit is the issue of contention here, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm aware. And this has happened in other issues on other types of energy projects, water projects, sewer, and there's that three-mile limit issue. And in the federal court, the judge ruled, and again, I'm no lawyer, I'd refer to the Honorable Senator Gillespie and some others, but my interpretation, what the court, Judge Pearsall, ruled is federal law, 7 USC-1926B, as amended, the municipality may not provide service under this section without the permission of the water system, and that's how the judge ruled, that the water system did not give permission. So, in other words, the city of Yankton could not annex that water, the water into their water system. It had to stay with BY. And we had some state law that was in conflict with that. This will clear up that conflict clearly, in my opinion, and make it so that these cities will not think they have a case to go sue the rural water districts. That's your 2.5-minute response.
Thank you.
And I think it's needed.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents for Senate Bill 113? Any other proponents? If not, are there any opponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. I'll apologize in advance if I'm a little underprepared. It was my understanding that Senator Klochek was going to be requesting this bill be tabled. We do oppose this bill for a couple of reasons. One of them, if you look at the language of the new on line 8, it talks about nonprofit corporations. I don't believe anywhere that there are boundaries described for a nonprofit corporation, and so where you get into the three-mile jurisdiction and where the boundaries are between two different entities when one of them doesn't have boundaries, I don't quite know where all of that lines up. In addition, I don't know as we go around in South Dakota clarifying federal law with state law, and we don't think that the language is necessary where it's added in on lines 13 through 15. If you go and look even at the Rural Water Association on the national level, their own website, you will find that they have an article out called 1926B, The Last Resort. These are not certain cases, and there's a court system in place for a reason. A lot of times what these court cases boil down to is the capacity to serve in an area and where the citizens in that area choose to serve, have their service. There are also other provisions laid out in state law where if a municipality takes in any territory from a rural water system, there's a payment schedule laid out for that, and we pay a certain percent of the customer base and on and on, almost like there is with electric territory. I guess I would close by saying the rural water systems are not here supporting this bill. BY is not here supporting this bill, and the Municipal League is not here supporting this bill. And so none of the parties affected by this bill feel that it is necessary, and we would ask you to defeat the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other opponents to Senate Bill 113? If there are no other opponents, I will open it to questions from the... I'll allow Frank some rebuttal here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In rebuttal, I could have asked them all to come. This is simply straight-up language that does clarify and does need to what's been done. The nonprofit was added. We added that for the simple reason that they need to be included in this. The language is clear-cut. That 7 USC does make it very clear-cut. That's what makes the heart of this bill, that those territorial boundaries shall not be violated. And I would ask that, we do give it some good consideration. The very reason that they're not here opposing it, they're not here supporting it either. We haven't had any opposition, where are they at? If they're opposed to it, there's no testimony being opposed as well. So would rest my case, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Now I'll open it to questions. Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions, and I'm not directing it at any particular proponent or opponent, but my first question is the recital of the water chapters. Are those all-inclusive? Are there any water chapters that are not included in that recital?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cook.
I would defer to Tom. I'm not sure when we drafted it if we were inclusive or not. It is inclusive.
Tom, I'm just wondering, it's got this recital of water user districts and sanitary districts. Are there any rural water systems that are not included there in that recital?
I believe that the four entities listed there, including the nonprofits, would hit all rural water systems.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, I have another question.
Yes, go
ahead. And perhaps Yvonne is the proper person to answer it. Mike, I have a concern about the addition. And I apologize, Senator Klochek, I should have asked you about this ahead of time, Senator, but adding in outside the territorial boundaries of the rural water system. And I'm wondering, first of all, are there any rural water systems that come within the 3-mile boundary of a municipality? I'm assuming there are.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, I think that would be a fairly frequent occurrence.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
I will open this to discussion and or action.
Senator Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to pass Senate Bill 113, and I have some comments.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Seconded by Senator Klochek.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could have some remarks. I'm concerned about this bill, but I will, for purposes of moving forward on committee action, make the motion. It would have been nice to hear from some of our rural water folks as to their position on the bill. I am a little concerned about a local problem being brought to the legislature, but for purposes of moving the bill along, I will make the motion. Thank you.
Any other comments? If not, we'll call a roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klochek?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Thiessen?
No.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
No.
Mr. Chair, there were yeas 5, nays 2.
5-2. We'll go to the floor, do pass. Now I'll turn this little gavel over to the right person.
Thank you, Senator Bradford, and thank you, committee members. I had a bill up in the Tax Committee, and I'm now trying to get the internet to work, and it's not working on my computer. What's my agenda look like? What's next? Yes, Senator Klocek.
Personal privilege.
Yes, that's granted.
For a compliment to Senator Bradford at his first chairmanship of the local government committee. I think the first chairmanship ever in his career. He did a magnificent job, very outstanding and very fair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and very much kudos to Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Senator Klocek. I think you've been above and beyond.
All right, we'll move to Senate Bill 155. An act to provide for the revision of certain offensive graphic place names. Senator Bradford.
Senator Bradford, District 27. This bill is it's kind of an addition or a follow-up. Actually, we had a bill that was to remove all geographic names, and it hasn't, the whole process has not been totally completed. All this bill does really is ask that we finish it up, and as you can see in the bill, it has some of those that have been changed, but it also has some that haven't been changed. I think this is a thing that we should do. I think it's just in the best interest of our state. I know at the time these were done, I don't think there was any offense tended, but it can be interpreted that way. And I think it's just something that we definitely should do. And with that, I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 155? Any further proponents?
Is a proponent for?
Yes, a proponent is someone who is in favor of the bill.
Good morning, Chairman and committee members. My name is Betty Ann Gross, and I'm an enrolled member of the Sistemwaptin Sioux Tribe of the Lake Traverse Indian Reservation, and I'm currently from the Sioux Falls, South Dakota area. And I'm one of the two persons that conceived of this bill back in 2001 or 2002. That where we found 38 offensive geographical place names, 28 referring to Native American women and 11 referring to the Negro culture. And I want to thank Senator Bradford for sponsoring this bill, and I would like to see it pass to where we can get these places renamed to something that's more reflective of today's culture and to the beauty of the American Indian women, and also to the beauty of the black culture here in the state of South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 155?
Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you.
And my name is Makah Duta, a.k.a. Becky Redder-Thvira. I'm here supporting this bill today, and that you finish. A lot of you know my Indian name. Very important, my relatives, as I and all of the others, that this is very, very important because it is beautiful, our different, the different cultures of all that live here within the state, and the respect and the honor and all of the above that should go with that. This is very, very important, and I will tell each and every one of you, This is near and dear to each and every Native American's heart. Because from this, like I said, it's disrespectful. Everybody wants to be respected. But it also, if you think about this deeply, it also sets a stereotype within different ones and creates disharmony amongst the ones that live by it and know how sacred it is. This is our culture. This all ties in to from these names. So I would ask, no, I urge you to pass this, get this done, and put it back so all of us are at a equal flush and can walk in a respectful way, knowing that we are at a flush with all our peers. And only you can do that. Thank you. Bidamia.
Thank you very much. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 155? And just a reminder to sign the sheet, the sign-up sheet, for anyone who wants to testify. Anyone else in favor of Senate Bill 155? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 155? Any opponents to Senate Bill 155? Seeing no opponents, we will close public testimony and open up for committee questions. Questions of the committee. Senator Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this, you'll have to enlighten me, Senator Bradford. We passed a bill in 2001, if I remember right, to get the names changed. Is the process completed, or is it an ongoing process yet?
Senator Bradford.
Senator Miles, I'm going to let Tom kind of fill you in on that, because when he drew up the bill, he knows the status of what things were done and not done.
Go ahead. Yep, that's fine.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. What I found in looking this up, the 2001 bill had a listing passed, and several sections were codified in South Dakota codified laws. And Section 6, 119C4, is what came from the 2001 bill. And what we did in this bill was, and some of those were changed by the agency in Washington, and some have not yet been. It was interesting, the change didn't come until 2008. And what we did in the bill then is Section 7 lists the ones that were changed in 2008. Section 8 lists the ones that have not yet been changed by the federal agency. There's also considerations of things done by state and local agencies, and they were all directed in the 2001 bill to make those kinds of changes. And I, as far as I can tell, that has been done. A lot of these features are very small and don't show up on maps normally, but an example would be the Department of Environment and Natural Resources has long lists of administrative rules that specify the uses of lakes and streams and small tributaries, and they've made those changes in those kinds of things. But the federal agency hasn't acted on some of the ones that were identified in 2001. The other thing the bill does is sets up a state board of existing state officials already in here who would meet once a year to consider these issues as well.
Thank you. Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move due pass, and then I have some comments.
There's been a motion and a second for due pass on 155. Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, on first blush, I'm kind of one of these guys that is not interested in doing things just to be sort of politically correct. But I think all that a person has to do is look over this list, and you can be Native, white, black, or anything else, and you can see the wisdom and the reasonableness of asking that the federal government continue this process. And and make these changes. And that's, as I understand it, that's what we're really asking to do, is to continue a process that's really already been started. And I think it probably benefits all our citizens to proceed with that process. So I'm supportive of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? The chairman has a comment. I completely agree with you, Senator Deason, and I thank Senator Bradford for bringing this. My one question, and I wish there was someone from the counties here, do we have any idea how much this is going to cost them and or the state this year to do this? In your discussion, Senator Bradford, was there any discussion like that? I mean, are we talking all kinds of those green signs or bridges? And I don't know, maybe that doesn't account to much, but.
Senator, I don't think any of these have really have signs up. I think it's more a case of being on the maps that are in. When they do their new maps, those will be changed. And you understand that some of those are issued by the feds, and that's why we're trying to push them to see that it's done. And I would have assumed that, and I talked to the, I just talked to the county representative, and he never saw it. I mean, he didn't mention anything. So,
any further discussion? Seeing none, we have a do pass motion on the table. Those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. And the secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt? Teason?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are yeas, 7.
That do pass motion passes 7-0. Been moved and seconded for consent. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Thank you. Senate Bill 155 will not go on the Senate consent calendar. Up next, Senate Bill 157, an act to provide for the participation of independent voters in primary elections. Senator Bradford.
Here. Senator Bradford from District 27. I brought this bill forward because, well, in the beginning, if it would have been allowed, I probably would have been here as a Democrat. But since they had to throw out all the independent votes in my primary that voted for me. So I'm a little bit interested in this, in that part. But mainly, I do think that that we need to let those, because that, They're independent. In other words, they haven't really decided or don't which party they want to belong to. We had this in the past, and I just don't know why it was so emphatic that we eliminate those people from any process in the primary election. I just feel it's a in this day and age, when political lines are so controversial, that sometimes a person wants to take a look at both sides and decide which one is the best for the job, and maybe they have a little better center view than sometimes our own. In the case of some people, they can't decide when they have really as fairly when they have just two Democrats against each other. Sometimes an outside independent person will make that candidate more viable, more to really step up and say what they will do as a individual, rather than just be strictly on a party line. So with that, I'm going to let some other proponents testify. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponents of Senate Bill 157.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Kim Wright. I'm the chair of South Dakota Voice of Independence. And I thank you all for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of independent voters in support of open primary legislation. Prior to the November election, South Dakota, like the rest of the nation, experienced an increase in the number of registered voters. Likewise, South Dakota saw the greatest increase in voters registered as independents. Currently, there are nearly 82,500 registered independent voters in our state. Keloland News reported on October 31st that the number of voters registering independent jumped 9% from 2006, with Democrats seeing a 7% increase and Republicans seeing a 0.5% increase. While Secretary of State Chris Nelson has not supported open primaries, Keloland offered his explanation of this increase in independents as indicating just a little bit of dissatisfaction with both of the major political parties and folks not wanting to specifically be identified with a political party. Research has suggested that open primaries are good for voter participation. When independent and nonpartisan voters participate in the nominating process, they are more likely to also participate in the general election. During the past election, many of South Dakota's first-time registered independent voters were genuinely surprised to learn that they could not vote in the primary election. Opponents of open primaries often express concern that the party nominations would then be vulnerable and possibly manipulated. Yet, when the state passed House Bill 1014 in 1996, they did so with the ideal of encouraging the participation of independent voters. The South Dakota Legislative Research Council issue Memo 96-02 describes the election law reform as giving the political parties the opportunity to reach out to non-affiliated voters in a new and significant way. It also encourages and facilitates the participation of non-affiliated voters in an important aspect of the electoral process. The article goes on to suggest that allowing unaffiliated voters to participate does indeed contribute to a better voter turnout. Another concern of opponents is the uncertainty of outcomes in primary elections if unaffiliated voters participate. I would offer that candidates, like you, ran for office to serve all voters. Therefore, open primary results would best reflect the views and values of the elected candidate's constituents. Certainly, the issue of open primaries is not new to South Dakota legislature. I could not find in my research, although it's possible, that the parties have actually opened their primaries to unaffiliated voters since this 1996 legislation. In recent years, the Legislative Committee response to requests to actually open primary elections has been take it to the political party. Unfortunately, taking it to the party is not so simple. Who takes it to the party? Which party? One? Both? In what format? Direct requests? To whom? Within what kind of time frame? And so forth and so on. And of course, there is no guarantee that either party will include unaffiliated voters. Ultimately, taking it to the party means that tax-paying citizens are required to gain permission from a private organization to participate in a public process funded by public tax dollars. The current primary election process in South Dakota is one in which the political parties dictate to the government how the people's elections will be organized. Independent voters in South Dakota and across the country are organizing in an effort to participate in the electoral process and our government. The legal framework has become clearer with regard to open primaries, but litigation continues. Rather than review litigation, I will leave you a written summary of litigation across the nation. The goal of House Bill 1014 in 1996 was to include independent voters, taxpaying South Dakotans, in the electoral process. That goal has not been realized. On behalf of South Dakota Voice of Independence, I urge you to facilitate that goal by supporting this current bill, Senate Bill 157, to open primary elections in our state. It is up to you, our elected officials, to stand up and represent all the citizens of South Dakota. I thank you for your attention, and I would be happy to answer any questions regarding independent voters. And again, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 157?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. Some of you I've seen already this morning. I'm Senator Stanford Adelstein, or Stan Adelstein, from District 32, representing the eastern half of the most beautiful city in the state. I'm here to support this bill for probably three major reasons. The first one is South Dakota tradition. Many years ago, I was the precinct coordinator for the Republican Party in Pennington County, and it was at a time that there were some missile construction underway, and at that time the law in South Dakota was that if a voter turned up or a purported voter turned up at a polling place, even if they were not registered, if two other persons would testify that they were indeed citizens, they could vote. And what happened is literally dozens, if not hundreds, because we had pictures of dozens of voters who had never been in the state but were there on a temporary construction project, had two other people that testified, and it turned out the election went differently than any polling had shown. And when I came to the legislature to ask for some of the sort of legislation we have now, I remember a wonderful senator who said, Mr. Adelstein, he was older than I was, of course, then. I was in my early 30s. Mr. Adelstein, in South Dakota, we believe that 10 voters who aren't entitled to vote should vote rather than one would be denied the franchise. And that is the tradition of South Dakota, to really encourage everyone to participate. The second reason is that this bill is not for an open primary, in the sense that registered members of one party may vote for someone in the other party. And I would oppose that, because if a person is in an organized party, their job is to get their candidates nominated and elected. And it would suggest that there's a possibility of chicanery, which frankly I would not expect in South Dakota, but there's that possibility. So if this bill were to say that anyone may choose which party at the election for whom they would vote and get one ballot and change parties, then I would oppose it. The third reason for my support of this bill is that it encourages our parties, particularly all parties, it encourages parties to really listen to the broad expression of every voter. Today, and all the records show that there's an increasing number of individuals who are registering as independent. Surely in my district this is true. They're doing so because they don't think that our party or the other party truly represents them. I think that if they had the opportunity of participating in the nominating process, they would end up nominating stronger candidates of my party and perhaps the other party, not likely, but perhaps the other party as well, and that we would then have a recourse to candidates that represented more than perhaps occasionally the very small parochial interest of a minority of a party. But I'm saying that if we face the fact that, let's say, each party in the state had, about what we're beginning to get, about 40%, and 20% were registered independent, then of the 40%, it would only take 21 if they all got to the polls. Therefore, a candidate could become the nominee representing 21% of the citizens at interest, and therefore would have great difficulty being elected, whereas in addition to the 21%, they had to get 10% of the independents that are going to be very significant, it would take 31%, and we would end up having, I believe, better candidates. So I think numerically, historically, and principally, this bill should pass, and even if it doesn't pass on the floor, I think we need more discussion than we can get in a brief committee hearing. I appreciate your permitting me to testify, Mr. Chairman, and I'll sit in the back of the room rather than go back to my other committee, taxation, which is sort of confused today anyway, and I'll sit back there to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 157?
Mr. Chairman, members of Senate Local Government, I'm Larry Lucas, District 26A representative from Mission, South Dakota. I carried this bill last year and also carried it once back in the mid-90s, and it's an issue that I continue to get a lot of support and encouragement from, in particular from the independent voters that wished to be involved in the primary elections. That number, as from the prior testimony, is increasing in South Dakota. And quite frankly, there's a lot of reasons why people don't want to be affiliated or be involved in a political party. They see the gridlock on national television, and that is not the way they want to see government run. They also do not like to receive all the mailings in the campaign literature asking for donations. So if they're an independent, they're free from that. But yet at the same time, they would wish to vote for one of those candidates that are on the ballot. Now, Secretary Nelson will testify in a little bit in opposition to this bill, and one of the things he'll say is that the people that are on the ballot are nominated by a political party. Well, actually, they're candidates, and they're affiliating with a political party. So they can choose to affiliate with whichever party, Democrat or Republican, but we really don't have an official party nomination process, because we haven't had a political party convention that doesn't occur till after the primary. So I would argue or contend that they're really candidates and they're not nominees representing a political party. Another argument that Secretary Nelson may have is that the people on the ballot sometimes are you're electing to go to a convention to develop a party platform. And that may be the case. But if there are electors on the ballot that are going to go to a national political campaign or convention to develop a party platform or an agenda, then we could restrict the ballot or have a separate ballot for those of a political party so that they can vote for their individuals that are going to go work on the party platform, whereas the rest of the ballot with the candidates on would be open to all, whether you're an independent, Democrat, or Republican. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would urge your favorable consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further proponents of 157? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will move to opponents of Senate Bill 157.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, Representative Lucas is a good prognosticator of where I was going to come down on this because we have had this discussion several times before. I do oppose this bill, and I want to give you three reasons why. First of all, is simply the philosophical reason of what the purpose of a primary is. The purpose of a primary is for the members of a political party to choose who they think is the very best candidate to represent their party on the general election ballot in the fall.
And what this bill is asking for is to allow independents, people that have chosen to say, I don't want to have anything to do with a political party. I want to register as an independent. What this is asking for is for folks in that category to be able to help the political party choose who their nominee will be for the fall. And I philosophically, I don't understand, and I can't see the logic in that. And I'd ask you to think back to the recent presidential primaries that we were going through last year. And there's a lot of discussion coming from other states where independents are allowed to vote in those primaries, and a lot of prognostication about which candidate benefited or didn't benefit from the independent vote. And it really subtracted from the idea of the members of the political party being able to choose their best nominee. Along that same line, Representative Lucas is correct. Primaries are also used to choose the delegates to our state political parties and to our national political parties. And again, this bill is asking that independents be allowed to choose the delegates that go to our state and national conventions. And those conventions are where party platforms are set and everything else that the party does. And so again, this is asking that people that don't want to have anything to do with the party be able to select who goes to the party conventions and select the party platforms. Second reason for opposition is certainly an increasing in the cost of conducting an election. Right now, if there are nonpartisan races on the primary ballot, and in some cases there are, some cases there aren't, but if there are nonpartisan races on the primary ballot, we have a ballot for people that are independent, unaffiliated. If this bill passes, not only will we have to create that ballot, but we will have to have enough extra Republican ballots and enough extra Democrat ballots, because we don't know which ballot those independents are going to choose. And so the 80-some thousand independents in the state show up at the polling place, and we got to have three different ballots because we don't know which one they're going to choose. And so it's going to certainly drive up the cost of ballot printing. And I mentioned in Minnehaha County alone, there's 18,000 independents. And so there, you know, you're talking about needing maybe up to 36,000 more ballots simply to accommodate this. And then the third point that I would make, in lines 7 through 9 of this bill, and this is existing language that is being overstruck, the political parties today have the ability to invite independents to participate if they wish to. The Libertarian Party, when they were in existence, they exercised that option and invited independents to participate. I know last year the State Democratic Party was considering that and may do that again. The other parties might also. And so it's an option that exists if parties wish to exercise that under current law. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions when appropriate.
Thank you, Secretary. Are there further opponents of Senate Bill 157?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Eric Erickson representing the South Dakota County officials, which includes the auditors in the state who are responsible for the local elections. We rise in opposition just for the cost factor. We see this as rising costs in local elections when counties are struggling for funds. And see this as a problem for auditors. Thank you. Stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further opponents of Senate Bill 157? Seeing none, I'll give Senator Bradford a brief minute to rebut anything.
Mr. Chairman, with permission, I would relinquish my rebuttal to Senator Adelstein, if you would allow this.
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you very much, Senator Bradford. I would like to answer the three objections that were raised by my good friend and very, very competent Secretary of State. In fact, in the years that I've known him, this is the first time he's been in error. Number one, his suggestion that somehow the party itself is going to be weakened, or philosophically, those who are not members of a party should not be able to vote in that primary, disturbs me for this reason. The party is representative of a view a clock that stopped at a certain time. The idea of not having others participate in that process denies them the chance to deal with, in my case, a superior party, the Republican Party. And they have no opportunity to become part of that process and become part of that democratic growth, which I think, frankly, that we can accomplish and be more challenging. The second one he raised, which was interesting, was a question of cost. Cost, printing a few more ballots. There's no other cost involved, none at all. And his third objection was that, after all, the parties can invite others to join them. Well, if they want to invite others to join them, an independent who has not participated at all in the process, is not given any opportunity to vote in the primary, but must change the registration. I submit that those independents, or those who are registered for independents, don't do so because I don't want to be a member of one of those other parties. They join because they know not where they should be. And to say that perhaps if you're not well enough informed, you're not entitled to vote on the selection of a candidate. I think one of the best examples, well, I won't use it because I'm not a member of that other party, but it's interesting that what happened at the National Convention, where there was a conflict between several candidates, our state voted one way at the convention and another way at the election.
Thank you, Senator. I'll now close public testimony and open it up for committee questions. Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Questions for Mr. Nelson? Chris, I had a similar bill to this bill last year, and I know it's been up as long as you and I have both been here, and that takes us way, way back. Why wouldn't you want to streamline this rather than going through this very painful process that the parties have to do, and they missed some deadlines? I know the Democrats tried to do this, and they missed some deadlines this spring, and they are going to do it in the next election to allow the independents. Why not streamline this thing, do it what the people want and what the parties want, and do it, if you could kind of give me a little condensation or go a different path than your previous testimony?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, you use the term what the parties want, and as of today, other than the Libertarian Party, the other parties have said no. As of today, we don't wish to invite independents to come in. Now, that may change. But what this bill does is it removes what the parties might want, and it says that we as a state will mandate to the political parties who you must include in your primaries. And so it really removes that concept of what the parties might want.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd follow up. You are correct. I probably worded that correctly. Is it not? Are you aware of other states that allow this right now? North Dakota. Could you list off the states that allow this? What we're trying to do in this legislation?
Go ahead.
If I might, no, I can't list them. I know there are states have a lot of different ways of doing primaries. There are a number of states that require independents to be involved in their primaries. There are other states that allow a completely open primary where you can go in and choose whether you want a Republican or Democrat ballot. And there are a couple states that have moved way beyond that, and it's simply you go in and vote, and the top two vote getters go on to the general, even if they might be of the same political party. They've completely done away with the idea of segregating by party. And so there's a lot of different ways of doing it depending on the states.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions from the committee? I have a question, Chris, or Secretary Nelson. You said the Libertarian Party came and they allowed independent voters, but the Democrats, with what Senator Klocek was talking about, did they come to you then this past year and inquire on what the procedure would be for allowing independents to vote? And did the issues of the costs and of the logistics, that was all discussed, and the Democrats then ultimately decided not to? continue with that, if you could comment on
that. If I might respond to that, yes, we had conversations with the State Democratic Party as they were contemplating whether or not they wanted to invite independents. Time became a factor for them. If I remember correctly, they had a meeting the last Saturday of March of last year, and realizing absentee voting for the primary was going to begin in mid-April, and so we were very, very close to the point at which it was literally going to be impossible for us to actually implement it if the party had decided to include those independents. And so for that reason, I think for some reasons, some other reasons that dealt with which candidate would benefit from having independents involved in that primary also came into play. And for those reasons, they chose not to at that time. Now, we have a bill in the session, it's a House bill coming over here, where we are going to expand upon the language in this section and say, if you're going to invite independents, you need to make that decision by January 1st of the primary election year to give election officials time to we're going to have to change some software. We're going to have to deal with ballot printing and make some other changes. And so it's going to need to give us time to do that if they decide to implement that.
So a follow-up to that, we're, what, 20-some months from November of 10? Any discussions with you, either party or any of the parties?
No, at this point, no, other than I know at the time the Democratic Party did not go through with it last year, they said, you know, we might be interested in doing it for 2010, and so that's my assumption that may still be in the works.
Any other committee questions for any proponent or opponent? Seeing none, we will move to committee action and discussion. Senator Bradford?
Well, I think Chris might have brought about a bigger cost without this than there is with it, by the fact he said he's going to have to do a bunch of software, and that's already all legal to do. If they come in before January 1st, there's going to be a big cost there to accomplish that. So I really don't think cost is a factor. In fact, I don't think we ought to put a price on that, because in the case of my district, they had two special voting times that they moved the whole auditor's office down to Pine Ridge and Kyle. We had election days, you know, and I know that was a cost, and so I think if you are presented with the fact that if you do what's right, cost would not be a factor. So all I'm saying to you is, don't vote against the bill because of cost. Now, if you have some heartburn with the rest of it, that's fine. But with that, I would make a motion to do pass.
There's been a do pass motion. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded, do pass on Senate Bill 157. Further discussion? Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, I'm very torn, because I really feel that independent voters, to some degree, are shut out of the process right now. And but under the permissive nature of our current law and the ability of our parties to allow them to participate, I'm inclined to resist the bill with reservation, but as has been testified to, my political party did consider including the independents in a recent election, and I think the permissive nature of that is left to lie with the party itself and not as a mandate. And so I'm going to oppose the do pass motion. Thank you.
Senator Miles?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am struggling with it because of the mandate. I don't know that a mandate is the right word. If parties should choose to do that, then I think that's an option. But independents register for a reason versus one party or the other. Do we need to take a look at why? So I guess I'm going to oppose this for right now also.
Thank you. Senator Teason?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I join in the struggle that's apparently taken place in most of our minds here. I have the same issues. I don't want to be redundant in the discussion, but I'm going to support sending this to the floor and at least listen to some more debate and discussion on it. I think there's a serious issue to be made for these independent voters participating in the process. Thank you.
We have a do pass motion on the table. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we will move to vote. Those in favor of do pass on 157 signify by saying aye. Those opposed say nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
No.
Klocek?
Aye.
Miles?
No.
Schmidt?
No.
Keeson?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
No.
Mr. Chair, there were yeas 3, nays 4.
Motion to pass fails 3-4. The chair would entertain another motion on this bill. Senator Klocek? I have a motion to move to the 41st day. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to send Senate Bill 157 to the 41st day. Any discussion? Senator Klocek.
Well, I know where this motion is going, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I do think there's a lot of disenfranchised voters, and what better way, you know, we had a chance to do something the last several years to bring them back into the fold, into both political parties, and bring the Libertarians and all the rest of them in to allow for more participation in government. And again, we go down the path of maybe not having as open government or open process as we kind of thought. We know the reasons that have been expressed here today are valid ones, but I still think we should give every citizen the right and the opportunity to vote and participate, and we're certainly not going down that path today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of moving Senate Bill 157 to the 41st day signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek?
No.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Teason?
No.
Bradford?
No.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were yeas 4, nays 3.
That motion passes 4-3. Senate Bill 157 will go to the 41st day. Up next is Senate Bill 183, an act to establish certain requirements concerning the publication of county notices.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Margaret Gillespie, Senator, District 16. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I've handed the page, just a one-page email from a constituent, if I could have permission to have him pass that out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow committee members, Senate Bill 183 is brought at the request of a constituent of mine down in District 16, which includes Southern Lincoln and all of Union counties. I've had the page pass out an email from my constituent. She was unable to be here this morning, and I asked her to set forth her reasons in an email in lieu of public testimony on her behalf. The email is relatively short, and I'll just continue presenting the bill, Mr. Chairman, if I might, as you review that email. Committee members, Senate Bill 183 proposes to include a description from the nearest community in any publication of a legal notice set forth by the county. That physical description would be from the nearest community affected by the proposed notice mandated by the county. Current law requires the county commission to, in this particular statute that's before you, to designate the three legal newspapers that would be official newspapers. The law requires for the publication of the minutes of the county commission regular and special meetings. And what you see in the first paragraph of Section 1 in current law is just some cleanup language. The substantive change that we're proposing is on page 1, line 15, and then on to the rest of page 2, that underlined portion. So what we're asking is that wherever a notice is required to be published, that includes a legal description, that the notice include a physical description of the affected property from the nearest community. So in other words, we have perhaps a conditional use permit notice that's published, or a proposed zoning change that's published by the county auditor for a public hearing notice, and the legal description, if included in that publication, under this proposal would include a physical description. So if the legal description was the southeast quarter of Section 25 in Township 96, Range 49 in Lincoln County, South Dakota, the bill would propose that that also include a physical description from the nearest community, 4 miles south and one east of Canton. As you've seen in the email, my constituent just has indicated some longtime concern over reviewing those public notices, looking at a legal description and thinking to herself, where in the world is that? And am I affected by this proposed change, whether it's a zoning change or a conditional use permit, as to that affected legal description property? You'd have to be schooled in looking at a plat map, your plat book, to find that particular quarter and section and township to see whether or not you are affected. And what this would do is require a description from the community. Many of you have seen that in a, perhaps a auction listing where a piece of land is up for auction, the legal description is listed, and then afterward a particular physical description from a community for ease of direction so that you can get the bidders to the auction. Mr. Chairman, I would be open to an amendment on the bill. As you can see on page 2, line 1, if there is notice that includes a legal description, the current version of the bill is mandatory that it shall include a physical description. I'm open to an amendment and would be grateful to any committee member that would propose an amendment to change shall to may. That way it's permissive and the counties can include such a physical description if they so choose. I think the impact to the county budget is minimal. We're not talking about a great deal of additional lines in the public notice. And I think really what the bill would do is just bring the idea forward to our county officials to include that description of the particular property so that those reviewing the notices can have a better idea of where the property is at without being shut out if they don't have a plat map. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand by for any questions, and I'd approve any, or I would appreciate any favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponents of Senate Bill 183.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with the amendment, I don't think that we have an issue with this bill. Without the amendment, we would have concerns both of cost and then for counties that don't have 911 addressing. We don't know how they would have that description if the roads aren't named and without that. However, with the amendment, if it is left at a local control issue, we would be fine with it. And I will stand by for questions.
Thank you. Any further proponents of Senate Bill 183? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 183? Any opponents? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and move to committee discussion and or action. Senator Kolchak? There's been a motion and second to amend. We're amending Senate Bill 183, page 2, line 1, striking shall and inserting may. Is that correct? Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Amendment carries. We now have Senate Bill 183 as amended. Any further discussion or action? Senator Bradford?
Move to pass.
It's been moved and seconded to pass on Senate Bill 183. Any discussion?
As amended.
As amended. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, there are 7.
The bill passes 7-0. I have a consent motion. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of consent signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Seeing there is nothing more to come before the committee, the chairman would entertain a motion to adjourn. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. We are adjourned.